My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. Lee, I want to thank you for taking that opportunity and taking those minutes with me before I got up here. And I want to thank in advance all of you who are going to be subjected to a double dose of me. You might be thinking to yourself, that guy looks familiar. So, I'm the first of the group that you're going to get reprised. And I have been fed this weekend when Michael came up last night. Michael has a humble spirit. She was here when I got here, one of the first speakers I remember seeing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am constantly amazed at her spirit. I've seen her over the years many times, and she's got a powerful, easy message, easy to absorb, easy to listen to, and I love that girl. This morning, I didn't get to see all the Sheldon. I was not up on time. But damn, I got in here right when Sheldon was going to 2. Talk about killing it. You know, one of the things about these kind of deals, and I like this format, is because people don't come up here and do the instructional seminar on this is how you do this. People come up here and share their experience with it, and they give me different viewpoints, and they give me different perspectives, and they continue to feed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Dude, you know. And I love learning, you know, I love learning. You know, I learned from Sheldon's sponsor, who's one of my mentors, who came up in here and did what it is he always does. I call Bob Darrell the poet laureate of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. He just spends it like nobody. Man, Sheldon is far, you know, after, you know, I love learning from both ends of the spectrum. Learn a lot from this dude right here. Thank you. Thank you. And then, Jen, I've heard her story a lot, but the way she was killing 4 and 5, you know, what's the Frady Flakes and the... I don't know where you guys get these metaphors, but they work, you know. I'm like, man, and she was killing... And what was the other one I love, you know, the horometer, you know. Why is it all of us are going to leave with that one, you know? I'm just saying, that one just rang true. Soon as I heard, ooh, I like that, you know. And then I listened to Lee, you do the Al-Anon talk. You know, there's a synergy in the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. Although each one of us have been tasked with talking about a specific step, the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, if we have anybody in here that's new, and I hope we do, the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous are not a discrete series of activities that I take independent of one another. When sometimes people say, what step are you on? I was listening to Jim when she was talking about, I'm on 8.5. When you ask me that as a result of this AA way of life that you guys introduced me to, and as a result of practicing this AA way of life, I never know what to say unless I'm actively writing a 4-step. Then I can tell you I'm currently writing a 4-step, but that's not necessarily because I've been doing this thing a long time, and I still write 4. At my workshop at home, we're in 4-step, and I'm a member of the workshop, so I'm writing. You know, but by the same token, I'm still regularly doing 10s, I'm still doing 11s, you know, I'm still doing... So when you ask me that, so new friends, you know, first foray through the deal, it's easy to see where I've never done a 4th, I've never done a 5th, that's where I am. But as a result of being in here, you know, this integrated series of things that you guys have introduced me to now form Ralph White's life. It's the AA way of life. You know, it's not the theory. So the reason I say that is, you know, you'll hear stuff bleeding into each other. You know, I came up in here, you know, I'm a late bloomer. I started getting loaded when I was 16 years old, and I don't even count that. That's when I took my first drink. That's not when I got started. When I took my first drink, I'm not overnight alcoholic. I didn't just break out. I was in high school. It was cool. I was in the backseat of a car. I did some stuff. I drank when I had occasion to in high school, wasn't a lot of occasions. I'm a nerdy guy, I'm a square guy, I'm a high achiever guy, I'm a bright guy, I'm a college student guy, I'm a schoolboy guy, and I'm a scared of mama guy. So I wasn't doing it, you know. And my mama is, a, you know, ruled with a firm hand. And my mama would, you know, check this out. I remember I got one older brother. I got one older brother. He's 4 years older than me. And in elementary school, I was in about second grade. My older brother was in about fifth or sixth grade, right? And my mom was on welfare in the 60s, and she put herself back through high school. She put herself through college. She worked two jobs. She was a domestic worker. And so she was, inside of all this, going back to high school, going back to college, working two jobs, taking clothes in, she watched an iron feather fall. And on top of all this, my mom was always PTA president. She was always active in me and my brother's lives, the six of us. And so for my mom to be at the school was not unusual, you know, but this particular day, some kid came into the class, "Oh, your mama's up at school," and it's the middle of the day, and it's the middle of the week, and I'm wondering, what is my mom doing at the school? The kid continued, "Oh, she's up at the school, and she came up in your brother's class, and she gave him a whooping right in front of everybody." I said, okay, she didn't have to worry about the rest of us at all. I'm cool. I'm cool. I got that one vicariously. I'm not going to take one in front of everybody. So I was a square guy. I didn't get in trouble at school, you know, and I wasn't trying to. I was doing, I got ease and comfort out of what was happening to me in school. I loved approval. I loved attention. I was in the baseball. I did a lot of stuff. So, you know, I'm a late bloomer. I didn't really take off in my life of, you know, I love it when it says our drinking careers have been characterized. You know, you got to be one of us to call it a career. You know, I'm working a job, but our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vein and call it a career, because that's how I get down. You know, it's full time. Full time. And if my paid profession gets in the way, and that's a cold thing. My paid profession is what paid for me, you know, drinking and using. And it would get in the way of my drinking. And that's a cold thing right there, you know. I understand when Bill Wilson talks about alcohol was my master. I had met my match. Quicksand stretched out all, because I'm that guy. I'm the met your match guy. I'm the quicksand sinking going down. So I'm that guy, you know, because that's what it ended up happening for me. And even though it didn't start out that way. So it started out fun and games. It started out, you know, ooh, it's cool. Annie Greensprings, Boone's Farm, Tyrolia, Spinata, you know, Brass Monkey, you know, it started out like that, you know, and it progressed for me. I came out of school, I started working, and by 1986, when I got to you guys, I was 33 years old and I was done. I was 33 years old, your boy was done. Had not looked at myself in the mirror, you know, didn't know it. So I came and I crawled into you guys, and when I came that last time to stay, my fourth dance with you guys, and I came this last time with some anatomical facts firmly in place about a guy named Ralph. I learned that when my behind is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized that last time well enough. You know, I heard the music when I came back in the rooms. And I came back in that state that we got, that is necessary for a guy like me. Not that state of needing Alcoholics Anonymous. Not that state of hopefulness that you guys had a solution. I came in here in that state of desperation. I came in here in that hurting state. I came in here and I don't know what was waiting on me on this side of the street. I don't know what's waiting on me on the recovery side of the block. I do know what's waiting on me in the life. And based on that, I came up in here with you guys. And then I got faced with that terrible dilemma that Sheldon shared about so well this morning. Even though he's from the Jewish side of the track and I'm Southern Baptist side of the track, I have made up my mind too. I'm done with this religious stuff. Opiate of the people, rather smoke mine, thank you very much. You know, not trying to hear that. Yeah, grandmama, granddaddy, mama, you guys in church, you need somebody telling you how to run your life. You poor, you uneducated, you come from a place where I'm slick, I'm this new breed, I come up in the 60s when, you know, that's a, no, miss me with that stuff. When I turn 16, you won't have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of nobody else's church. Said it, did it, meant it. Call myself up in here to this room with you guys in that state. you know, and you guys offered me that terrible dilemma, you know, to be doomed to die an alcoholic death or to live life on a spiritual basis. What kind of choice? Are not always easy alternatives. Sound easy to the normal person. Death, life. But you added that little caveat at the end of life. On a spiritual basis. Ooh, why you go there, you know? And, you know, are not always easy alternatives. Why are they not easy? When are alternatives not easy? When they look equally distasteful, or they look, you know, equally distasteful, or they look exactly the same. Alcoholic death, spiritual, they look the same to me. Castor oil, cod liver oil, you know. Gas chamber, electric chair. You want me to shoot you or you want me to stab you? What kind of choices is this? Alcoholic death, spiritual life. Wait a minute. Is there a door number three? Ain't no door number three, dude. You know, this is it. And I look for door number three. I love when Sean was doing that. I look for door number three. Why would I believe that I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer, you know? And that, because I try. I don't believe it. I'm not one of the people to come in here and just because it's in the book say I'm taking it at face value. No, I don't believe it. I don't believe that only a spiritual experience will conquer what it is I suffer from. Okay, dude, have at it. Okay, so I tried a financial experience. I tried a falling in love experience. I tried a romance experience. I tried a working out experience. I tried a making money experience. I tried a chanting experience. I tried an acupuncture. I tried every other experience. Okay, maybe. And I did the negative second step, you know. I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. The negative second step. I had already come to believe in something. So when you guys offered me something different, and then you did the kicker. In addition to offering me something different, you did this other piece, which is why it's so important, our three legacy program. The fellowship for me early on was equally as if not more important at the beginning than the program. In fact, the fellowship was what I cruised on for my first year. Before I fell in love with the fellowship before I knew anything about the program. But what happened in the fellowship is, you know, when I was doing that first and that second step, the first step, you know, was a conclusion I draw based on my experience. And when you told me alcohol had its way with you, and you told me, and you told me, and you told me, and all of you told me it was no comeback from it, it snuffed out the last flicker of hope I could do it by myself. And then when you offered me this spiritual out that I didn't want to try, here's the other piece. I'm a smart guy. I'm not stupid. And even though I said, okay, this God thing, it ain't for a guy like me, because, you know, I don't like the way it looked like the medicine tastes. The spiritual experience. I ain't never tried it, but I don't like the way, even though that's the medicine you guys are prescribing, I don't like the way it looked like the medicine tastes. Wow. And who taking medicine for taste anyway? Me. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to get well. So, you know, this whole deal, here's the deal. First you said, we got a way out. Then, eyewitness testimony. In addition to me saying, I love when Sheldon said what his sponsor told him. Do I now believe? Nope. That wasn't, and I wasn't as emphatic on not believing. I had just overdosed on religion, and I wasn't believing in the way that I was brought up. I wasn't believing in the myths that they told me, and that's what it felt like, it was a myth. So do I now believe? And then that convenience piece, or are you even willing to believe in the possible existence of? Slid in on that, and then I listened to the eyewitness testimony. You guys had me. And then if you guys had me, made a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to the care of this power that I didn't know nothing about. Said the same thing Bob said. Things like, what do you mean God ain't in step three? And my sponsor said to me, it ain't but two things you need to know in order to start this process. Number one, he is. Number two, he ain't you. You know, that's more than enough for you to begin this process. Started this journey on that beginning. And this ego-reducing exercise that we call the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that ego reducer, you know, we can contain it real simple. Everything we've been talking about all the way through this weekend. You want to find this power? Grow God, shrink Ralph. Whole deal. Whole deal. Grow God. Okay, I want to grow God. How I do it? Shrink Ralph. Book says, as I disclose myself to him, he'll reveal himself to me. Grow God, shrink Ralph. Whole deal. Whole process of this deal. Now, the thing about a guy like Ralph, this ego-reducing process that you guys introduced me to, called the 12 Steps, I can use it for ego inflation. Easy. and under the guise of not, because I know how to look humble while having no humility. I know how to do that real good. You know, I know the right things to say. I know the right demeanor to have when I say it. You know, that's why I'm more dangerous than a plain spoken person. You know, I'm one of these guys that, you know work the crowd. Okay, I know you don't say that in polite company, but I'm sure thinking it. He don't need to be. He ain't on my level. He ain't, you know, okay. I know don't nobody else think like that. That's me. Transparent. That's the... It's ego-reducing exercise. And so then I go into 4 and 5. Because if I'm going to give this decision I made in the third step some legs, if I'm going to give it life, because the third step Sheldon talked about, if I found God in the second step, we'd have a two-step program. We'd have a two-step program. You know, I made a decision. Now I'm on the journey. And that's the rest of the day. Now I'm on the journey. Now I'm on the journey. You know, and Sheldon said, well, nobody likes the voice. And I guess I'm one of these sadistic people. No, I'm not sadistic. I'm masochistic. Something happened. Something has happened. From the first time I put pen to paper, something has happened. Where it's an endeavor and it's an exercise that I look forward to. It says, next we launched. Don't you like that word? Get ready. You know, when you, SpaceX is out near my house. It's in Hawthorne. That's not far from me. And if you drive up the street, if you're driving up the street called Hawthorne, SpaceX is there. And when you pass SpaceX, it's got some of the, you know, missiles that have been out in their back. And they sit up on their pods, and you can see them. And when they get ready to take off, when they get ready to launch into a vigorous course of action, it's some fire up under their behind. So when you're in the third step, it needs to be some fire up under you, you know, and you're getting ready to launch, baby. You getting ready to take off. Bill calls it going into the fourth dimension of existence. And when I do that right, and when I get ready, I'm new friend. I'm telling you. Oh, man, you in for a ride. And when you up there, sometime you don't want to come back. Sometime when you get up there, and you don't get up there with just 4 and 5. When you launch on this vigorous course, you launching for the rest of the deal. And sometime when you get up there, I had a friend in the workshop. We were talking about it two weeks ago. And he was saying, damn, but when you launch, you got to come back to earth. And you've been up there, and you've been in fourth dimension, and you seeing things. You've done 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and you seeing, but you got to come back. I said, that's the deal. That's the beauty of it. Because when you see them, you got to come tell somebody. When you see them, you got to tell them what it's like to launch. When you see it, when you get in your life, you want somebody, you can't help it. Or else you ain't been there for real. You just talking about it. You just talking about space flight. You just talking about, but when you go for real, when you taste grace for real, when it's real in your life, when you come up out of it, oh, you got to tell somebody. You got to come back down and tell somebody. And that's what it is we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't do a lot of talking about this power we introduce you to. We don't do a lot of describing this power. We don't. That ain't what we do. It's a boy down here, one of my boys down here, Steve Lee. And Steve, you know, he was talking about that second. And Steve said, we don't do a lot of talking. We don't do a lot of describing God. It's like if I ask Sheldon, how do I get to Vegas from here? And Sheldon starts telling me, Ralph, when you get to Vegas, you're going to see a hotel down there. It's got a roller coaster going around. Ooh, you know, you're going to go to a hotel, and it's got a mall in it. It's got the most expensive stores in that mall. It's going to be glitter. It's going to be glitz. If you go to Old Vegas, it's a street down there where you go out, and the women out there with their stuff hanging out. And Ralph, it's everything in this. Sheldon, hold up, dude. I just asked you how to get to Vegas. When I get there, I'll experience it for myself. Steve, when he says that, it just shoots chill. We just tell you how to get to Vegas. And so when I come out of that fourth and that fifth step, when I come out of that thing and I'm sharing with somebody else, though, you know, I'm sharing my resentments, I'm sharing my fears, and I'm sharing, you know, my sex conduct. And then I share those deep, dark secrets, get into every dark cranny and the rest of it. When I come up out of there, Now it talks about, you know, so I, you know, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. What do I do when I admit the exact nature of our wrong? We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Now, this defects of character, that's an interesting thing, defects of character. Character is not my thinking, necessarily. Character is not my feelings. You know, you don't judge a person by, you know, okay, he can act, he can think crazy as hell, you know, but he's a guy. When they describe my granddaddy and they gave a character reference, they said, this man was married to the same woman for 53 years. This man came home every day at 3:30 and had a dinner. And if you talked about my grandmother's character, and every day she had a plate on the table. Now, for me, I thought that meant granddaddy always wanted to come home to the same woman for 53 years. And if I ever wanted that, I'm like, that sounds boring as hell to me. I don't want to be like granddaddy. You know, I ain't trying to be one woman my whole life. I don't know if granddaddy thought about us. I don't know. I know what he did. I know what he did. The character of a man and woman measured by what you do. You know, this program, you know how they say sometimes this program is not for people who want it. It's for people who need it. It's not for people who need it. It's for people who want it. And now I've heard a lot of people share, and I'm kind of in agreement. It ain't even for people who want it. It's for people who do it. It's for people who do it. There ain't no chapter in our book into thinking. There ain't no chapter in our book into desire. It's into what? In the action. It's about the people to do. And so these character defects that we're going to talk about now in 6 and 7, you know, and I'm a guy, I like to do, you know, stay in my assignment, and inside of my assignment, I'm assigned something to Sheldon, said, don't none of us understand that one. No. And I'm like, dude, I got to talk about that. You know, so now he done already put the caveat out there. Dude is going to talk about something he don't know nothing about, because don't nobody know nothing about it. Really? But he's right, so I'm just going to wing it, you know. Indulge me, you know, because if you look at the evidence of my life, every now and then it'll look like, dude, don't know nothing. Every now and then it'll look like, dude, you know. So this idea of character, it takes me back to the same thing that took me in step one. Step one is a surrender condition. And in step one, I didn't surrender to drugs and alcohol surrendered me. And my defects of character, the same thing in 6 and 7, were entirely ready to have. How do I get ready? I don't get ready to stop hoeing by not hoeing. I get ready to stop hoeing by hoeing. Oh, I did not mean to be that crude. See, I apologize to the committee because I don't have a filter sometimes. Now, I'm not going to be profane. I'm not going to be out of line. But sometimes I don't know what's coming out. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. And for me, Aaron, it usually ain't about, you know, I don't stop going by not, I don't stop tricking by not tricking. It's usually more in my case, you know. I don't stop lying. I stop doing it by doing it. I stop an activity by doing it too much. I stop an activity because it loses its juice. And then, just like, but Ralph, you stop drinking. Bill in the 12 and 12 talks about why it is that he thinks we got absolute release from drinking. And we won't get absolute release from anything else the way that we got absolute release from drinking. Bill says that when we drank against our will, drinking was enough. The human instinct, the basic human instinct, is an instinct for survival. So when I'm killing myself, I'm going against my basic human instinct. When I stop going against that one, I'm aligning myself with my basic human instinct for survival. So, of course, I can get a perfect release. But all these other instincts, my instinct for approval, my instinct for community, my instinct for comfort, my instinct for, you know, some of those instincts that have drives that serve me well. You know, if I'm not a guy that's going to stand in front of you and talk about, I don't care what you think about me. If I didn't care what you think about me, I probably wouldn't brush my teeth in the morning. You'd be turning your head when I'm talking. I'd be oblivious to it. I don't care. I don't smell it. It's on you. You know, if I didn't care what you thought about me, I wouldn't care about my hygiene. I wouldn't care about my appearance. I wouldn't care about being appropriate. I wouldn't care about being, you know, respectful. No. there's a place for that in a community of people, in a society of people. These instincts, before a guy like Ralph, these are instincts that are gone, that have far exceeded their intended purpose. And he talks about, to the extent that my instincts and my need to fulfill those instincts and desires exceed their intended purpose, that's the extent to which I have these defects of character. Interesting to me. And when you think of defects, here's the news, new friends. I don't have to accept unacceptable behavior from me, but embrace the fact that I'm defective. Don't walk around thinking there's something wrong. Oh, man, I do that. Embrace it. Get used to it. You're ready for it. Why is that? Why would dude be talking about that? How can I be defectless? If there is any entity without defect, what would we call it? God. To be human is to be defective. It's the human condition. And in fact, it is through my defects. It's through my defects of character. It's through those defects I find some of, you know, some of what it is that makes Ralph me. That's why in the seventh step it says, remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the usefulness, way of my usefulness to you and my fellow. Doesn't say remove every single defect of character, because that ain't going to happen. I'm not saying it because it's in the book either. It ain't going to happen. I'm saying it because I'm 64 years old. It ain't happening in my life. And I know a whole bunch of other people in life. I ain't seen it happen in theirs yet either. My granddad, the guy I admire more than anybody in this world as a man, ain't happening. You know, so what is it? When we think of defect, when you think of the word defect, what might come to your mind when you think of, let's fix a defect? When you hear it in commonplace terms, what's defects? You hear it in the automobile industry, right? Sometimes you hear it in the automobile industry. You hear this make and this model has a defect. And when that happens, what happens to that make and model of car? What do they do, Aaron?
Recall
it where? To the manufacturer. Why? Feel me, replace the part, because the car don't work on itself. Six and seven, recall to the manufacturer. Car don't work on itself. Car don't work on itself. Heard a lot of people share, I'm working on my defects. Okay, good luck. Because I know when I'm working on mine, I'm giving them muscle. When I'm working on mine, I'm finding justification. You know, I'm finding a reason. Damn. And then I finally say, oh, well, I'm just like, then I throw that one out. That's just the way I am. We know. That's why you up in here. We know. And then I get enough of the just, that's just the way I am, and I lay down one too many times, or I get one too many of those red envelopes, or I get called in one too many times, and I keep running into the same things. My sponsor says in 6 and 7, these defects of character that eat my lunch, they're not new. They're not new. And they arise out of me. So what are you talking about then, dude, this deal? Talk about my experience with 6 and 7. Book talks about this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This lifetime thing. Most people, when you talk to them in Alcoholics Anonymous, need to holler at the new people for a minute. Because your question might be, when am I done with 6 and 7? 12 and 12 calls it a lifetime. Lifetime. It's the deal. It's the deal. Third step, I said, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. That's where it shows up. Self manifested in various ways was what it defeated us. The thing about 6 and 7, and I guess I started this talk talking about the synergy of the steps, how they all are related. how you really can't separate one from the other. They're not discreet. And Bob in step three was talking about, it seems like there's entirely no way to get rid of self without his aid. And he said, what is it that God, that I can do without his aid? And here's where I think the rub is in 6 and 7. I think some of those instinctual desires that go beyond what they're intended for me, that come out of self-centered fear, chief activator, come out of resentment and come out of my selfishness. I think sometimes it's the first place and it's the only place in my life where I think I get a taste of power. Bob was talking about what part of my life, and it feels like I don't need God's help. I don't need that power, and I don't need God's help to hurt you. It feels like, and that feels like power. That exercise of self-will run riot. Sometimes it feels like power, but what it is self-will run riot. I was listening to Jan when she shared that aha moment that propelled her in her fourth step. She talked about exercising that defect of character I've been in. She talked about standing in a meeting, and it can start out, we plan, right? We plan. But now you done hit below the belt, and you've activated that fear in me. I stood in 9604 South Figueroa with a woman in the meeting, 2 years sober. Almost the same thing as Jennifer. You know, and I'm sitting there, and she says, and she was sharing something that I didn't necessarily agree with and disagree with. You know, she said something. I still remember it to this day. I remember it to this day. She was on a panel, sober a little longer than me, and she was saying, you know, yeah, people coming in these rooms now with dualism. Alcoholism is a disease. Drug addiction is a choice. It's a habit. I said, you know, and I'm not getting into the merits of it. I'm just telling you how seared in my brain that resentment is. I still remember the conversation. After the slot, I went up to her and I said, you know, I enjoy what you had to share, but that thing you shared about drug addiction is a habit and alcoholism is a disease, I'm not sure. You need to go tell your sponsor. You need to go share with your sponsor about that. I said, oh, okay. If I share something that you share, if I say that I like what you share, I can share that with you. If I don't like what you share, share. Yeah, that's right. Got in then. Next thing you know, she's taking off on me. And she's that kind of woman. I'm the kind of guy, I don't win those kind of arguments. Because I don't have the capacity. It's not that I'm better than. I grew up scared of girls. You know, I still don't like confrontations in public with loud women who affront you. I still don't like that. Unlike some guys in this room who don't mind going toe-to-toe, I'm not going to sling a bunch of bees out there. I'm not going to belittle you. And at this club, you needed, and with this girl, that's what you needed to do. And she went there with me, and I went there with her. A guy I didn't recognize, but that fear. I'm standing in the middle of this hall with people looking at me being belittled by this girl. That fear of what you think about me. That fear of being punked. Big fear for guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. And women. Women think that word just applies. And that fear of being disrespected. What they're going to think about me. And that fear caused me to take off in the middle of that room. You know, in the middle of that room. You know, so that defect that reared its ugly head in a way I had not ever seen in recovery. I was a little less than 2 years old. I had not seen that guy. Because nobody had come at me that way, sideways in the rooms. I had been blessed. And she didn't come at me. She shared her. She got the right. And so I took off like that. And I got a sense of standing up. I got a sense, as I'm sure she did, this sense of what I thought felt like. But that exercise, so here's the cold thing about when you exercise self-will that way, and it feels like you exercise in power. You feel like it's the power to get people off you. It's the power to put people in place. It's the power to put people in check. It's the power to get people to act the way you want them to act. It's the power to see that look in there like, don't mess with me. But here's the thing about why that ain't power and why that's just self-will. I don't have the power to direct and control that. I can't direct it, I can't control it, and I can't predict it. I can't predict it. I can't direct it, and I can't control it. Because check this out. That stuff will come out when I don't want it to come out. Came out on my stepson. That right there, that defect of character right there that I thought was a power, was power for me. And so the defects that eat my lunch the most, I think I get something out of, you know. And so my son, stepson was, oh, and I'm deep in recovery now. I'm double digits, maybe close to 20 years sober. And my son was drinking and he's smoking. And I don't mean cigarettes. He was living with me and he had moved out. Went up the street one day. He was at a gas station panhandling. My stepson came to the house one morning. River opened the door of my daughter. He wants to come in. Don't let him in. Oh, Pops, can I just come in? And he came at me and I'm like, check this out, dude. If it's going to be anybody smoking and getting loaded, it'll be me. You know, I don't get smoked on. I smoke on people. You know, I drink on people. You don't get loaded on me. I get loaded on people. I'm taking off on him. And he's trying to, you know, and he says something crazy. And I really took off on him. And I took off on him so cold, I looked at my daughter's face. And he wasn't scaring her. I was. Who is this guy? Who's daddy? I've never seen this guy. I am, and the whole thing that came out of that, the instinct that first provoked that was, I'm protecting this house. Ended up being the monster in the house. I'm protecting this house. Couldn't predict it, couldn't control it, couldn't direct it. Felt like, no, it felt powerful to check that young man, put him in his place. And when I saw River's face, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. So this idea that you think is something to play with, this 6 and 7 thing, went through some phases with, where do I take that? My initial phase with step 6 was practice its opposite. Had a friend, used to say when she did step 6, that's a sponsor in fact, do a cooperation card. When it comes up, if one of your defects of character is, you know, your dishonesty or lying, you got to replace it with honesty. God won't leave a vacuum. He won't leave a vacuum. In order for you to, okay, if one of my defects is, you know, dishonest, and that was a big one for me, because of the exact nature of the wrong and the defect of character that led to the shortcoming was that fear of what I think you think. I'm walking around a meeting one time, just walking, you know, somebody came up, oh, ain't you the lawyer? My brother's a lawyer, right? And people mistake us, call us twins. We ain't. Ronnie's a year younger than me. Oh, ain't you the lawyer? I said, yeah. I ain't no lawyer. Ain't never been a lawyer. Yeah, just came out. What? And I got sick of myself for that kind of, you know, for that kind of misrepresentation, you know, for that kind of. And so I got sick of myself and I got sick of my. But here's the deal. Being sick of myself ain't enough. I used to think that was enough. I used to think sex. Then I moved to a point where I thought 6 and 7 was kind of a passive exercise. Kind of a, okay, God, take it away from me. I need you to take it away. This whole thing, you know, as a married man, had affairs, as, you know, a person had never, you know, committed. Okay, I don't want to do that. And I thought what it was, I was practicing step 7 as a situational affair. As situations come up, I don't want to be doing this no more. I want to be a person that you could. I had never looked at the fact that I have something to do with this. I have a part to play with this. I have to actively be involved with this. And I had never invited God in to change Ralph. From the and see, I always thought I had to be changed thinking before my actions change. And the book talks about we can't think ourselves in the right action, but we can live ourselves in the right thinking. And I always thought I had to be thinking. I needed to be like granddaddy. I needed to be content with coming home to a woman. Yeah, you know, It's going to be dull, but I'm old. I've thrown in the towel. Okay, I give. I'm just going to come home every day and look at you, and you look at, and we're going to be cool. When that day comes, I'll be good, you know. I had never, ever, ever, and I've done sex conduct inventory. You know, these other steps, they're not there for not for a reason. They're there for a reason. Check out what filters in the 6 and 7. When you come out of the sex conduct inventory, it says, you know, we ask ourselves, you know, we ask God to shape a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life. Then it says, you know, we ask God to mold our ideal. So I'm asking in prayer for God to never, and I say it, and I do it, and I write it, but I had never internally said for myself, you know, why is it that I'm sober? 31 years old. Why is it that I'm, God took the taste out of my mouth. That's right. He took the taste out of my mouth. What else has he done for me? What is it that Ralph has done to cooperate with the taste being out of his mouth? I don't go around places gratuitously hanging out. I don't go just like Jim. You know, I don't go in the sandwich shop looking for a sandwich at the bar. Oh, I don't go to sell a car in a bar. Wait a minute, you don't do stuff like that? No, I don't do stuff like that. I don't go hang in some of the places I used to go hang with. Oh, really? I don't go hang with some of the people I used to go hang with. Oh, really? Why is that? Because I've replaced it with something that is much better. I started out with just not wanting to drink and use. Something happened. More important than not drinking and using, for me right now, I'm not running from drinking and using. I'm running towards sobriety. I've changed from what it is that I'm, it's the same as the negative second step. Coming to believe in the hopelessness and futility. Okay, I don't know if I want this, but I don't want that. I want this. Same thing in 6 and 7. It ain't enough that I don't want to be cheating no more. No, forget I don't want to be cheating. Forget I don't want to be cheating. I want integrity. I don't want to be stealing no more. Forget I don't want to be stealing. I want to be honest. I want to be responsible. I want to be trusted. I want to be respected. I want to be... Changed everything. Forget what it is I don't want to do in the defect. How do I want to... Had never looked at God. Mold my values. It talks about, and you know, my whole attitude and outlook about life will change. And when I look at Granddaddy, I didn't look at Granddaddy as being a man who didn't chase women. I looked at Granddaddy as a man who respected my grandmother. I looked at Granddaddy as a man who was a stand-up guy. I looked at and one of the things that I've also learned for me in 6 and 7, it's not a solitary exercise. Nothing for me is solitary in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not like a lot of other people. I need all the help I can get. I need you guys. I need transparency. I need markers. I need accountability. My sponsor needs to know this is the guy that I'm trying to be right now. And when I fall short of the mark, which is going to happen on some of them, you know, I need that. And I need to be transparent with you guys. And I need what it is that you give me. I tell you, I'm better with you than I am by myself. And here's the other piece. Somebody else shared it when they were there. I think Bob shared it. Not only accountable to my sponsor, to my sponsees. Not only to my sponsees and not only to my sponsor, to my family, to myself. I want to walk on the sunny side of the street. I want to be somebody I have never been. I want to meet somebody I have never met. I want to do something. I'm not trying to be better than nobody else. I'm trying to be better than me. I miss Sheldon this morning because we've been up since 5 in the morning. You know, my phone was off because of the meeting. So when I went and put it on the charger, I didn't have it, the ringer up. And I'm old, and I get up and pee too many times in the night, and that's something y'all didn't need to hear, but I can't pull it back. So I'm up on one of the bathroom forays, and I say, okay, let me go get my phone off the charger. I know it's charged right by now, and let me look and see. Maybe I didn't hear some messages from home because I'm 3 hours ahead, and I had all these missed calls. And my baby girl was in an accident last night, a car accident, and it was bad. And it was good. She was riding in an Uber, in a Lyft. Her and her girlfriend, they're 23. I've never got a call in the night about my girl. Neither one. Got a 34-year-old and I got a 23-year-old. My 34-year-old is an attorney, practicing attorney. Married to a young man that if I could have handpicked, I would have handpicked him. He came up to me and asked for her hand in marriage. I walked her down the aisle. Never got a call in the night. My 23-year-old just graduated from BU last May. She's an actor, so she's dramatic. She's back home in L.A. She's working for one of the top talent agencies, and she's still, you know, trying to do her thing. Never got a call in the night. One of the challenges of parenthood. Sign me up. Sign me up. Called the hospital. Called my ex-wife. She was at the hospital. We talked all through the night. So River had a CT scan and she had an MRI and she doesn't remember anything. So she wakes up and she's hysterical. What's wrong with my car? You weren't driving. She was like Janet. Kept asking, how old are you? River kept saying, what's wrong with my car? You know. You wasn't driving, baby. You wasn't driving. She had a concussion. She don't remember anything. And Lisa said, I'm going to put you on the phone. I'm going to put the phone up to her ear. And when she heard me talking, I guess she just felt free to be a little girl again. Because, you know, she's 23. And if it's any parents out here that have kids anywhere from 15 to 20, you know they know everything. You know you done had bouts. I'm sitting up here waxing all, you know, yeah, daddy's girl. No, it ain't always like that. You know, it'd be like, you know, somebody better come get her. Somebody better come get her right now. Somebody better come get her. Because she thinks she know, you know, and she, you know, she, dad, you don't, you know. But what you guys have done. Because she hears dad on the phone. Forget I know everything. Forget I'm grown. Forget I'm a young lady in the world making my own way, making my own decisions, doing my own thing. I'm scared and I'm hurt. And daddy's on the phone and I'm a little girl. And she's just crying, and she's just, dad, and she's crying. And out of that, get her off the phone, get her released. I said, that wasn't a good idea, I guess. Ooh. So through the night, stuff has happened. And I've called back a couple of hours ago, and we talked. Here's the thing, I'm supposed to be talking about 6 and 7. Even if you're not a finished product yet, even if you take your brokenness to this power. Just take your willingness. He'll do something. He'll do something with you. God don't need my permission to change me, but he does need my cooperation. He's done something with his boy. I can't tell you guys. Leslie was like, you need to get on a plane. I'm like, no, I don't need to get on a plane. I'm not a doctor. Her mom's there. Her sister's there. Her grandmother's there. Her uncles and aunts are there. The doctors are there. I need to come tell somebody about this power. I need to come tell somebody that this car got totaled and my little girl just got facial last. I need to tell somebody that even if that hadn't been the way it turned out, I need to tell somebody that this deal that we do is real and it's effective and it's got legs. I need to tell somebody that he's transformational. This stuff. Okay, enough of that. But the 6 and 7, how do I give it legs? 8 and 9. When I start doing 8 and 9, some of the things in 6 and 7 that are most glaring I see, I procrastinate, start 8 and 9 immediately. I'm dishonest, start 8 and 9. I have not always been, start 8 and 9. This cleaning up my side of the street process right there is going to address much of what it is I see in 6 and 7. And I'm going to start walking on the sunny side of the street. And I'm going to walk, and I'm not going to get into 8 and 9. I'm going to let 8 and 9 do 8 and 9. You know, you guys here already, I done already went back through other people's, because it's, like I say, it's an integrated series. And I can't talk about 6 and 7 if I don't tell you guys my journey through 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But about it, that's the only way I got to 6 and 7. This thing about 6 and 7, this lifetime deal that you guys put my feet on, this lifetime, and I have a love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't know about you. I have a love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't have a love affair with Ralph White all the time. You know, but I have a like affair with him most of the time right now. I've discovered something as a result of coming into these rooms, as a result of acquiring these principles, and as a result of applying these principles. I've always been a guy that has been so consumed with what I think you think about me that I need to talk the way I think I need to talk in a certain situation. I need to present the way I think I need to present in a certain situation. I need to come up here and be real cool and be tough guy. I'm from Watts. I don't cry. I'm out here in the South Hobbs. I got to represent, you know. And what will happen as a result of this ego-reducing process that we call Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of recovery, what will end up happening for you, guarantee you, if you go through this deal, if you do this deal, if you do this thing with everything that's in you, you ain't even got to apply the same zeal and dedication that you apply to your drinking and using. Just do the best that you can with right where you are right now. If you apply, I guarantee you something to happen that you didn't expect to happen. It's an unintended consequence. We don't talk about it all the time. But one of the things that has happened for your boy, you'll walk your own walk. You'll walk your own walk. You won't worry about what they're saying at the meeting. You won't worry about how you're looking out there. I've had many situations like that situation before, and now what I say is thank you for sharing. And then now what I do is I ain't got to interject myself in your business. I ain't got to instruct you. I don't have to check you. I don't have to change you. I don't have to. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to nothing. And I don't have to be in situations and in company where I got to be somebody I'm not. I was at a parking lot at my home group one time, not too long after this situation with that girl. And I'm standing in the parking lot with the fellas. This is something that I know most of you guys won't believe. But coming out of a meeting, There are some people who can leave a meeting, stand in the parking lot, and say some things that you wouldn't believe they're talking about right after coming out of a spiritual meeting. I know y'all find that hard to believe out here. In Los Angeles, we do it all the time. So I'm standing around with the fellas, and the fellas are talking fella talk, right? And some of the fellas are talking, and they're using some terms for some women that I don't use all the time. But I'm standing in the circle, and I don't want to be a little poop butt square guy. So something come out of my mouth, and the guy's head snapped around like, the dude just say, and my head snapped on my damn self. And I said, did I just say? And I went home for 2 weeks, and I thought about it. That ain't me. That ain't who I am. That ain't what I represent. That ain't what I stand for. But I want to stand in the circle with the big boys and take on that. No, that ain't who I am. And now I don't care where I stand, who I stand with, where I stand. No, you're going to hear Ralph White's voice come out of Ralph White. If you stay in this deal and you do this thing and you walk this walk and you get your feet put on a path to root, you'll sing your song in your voice. You'll sing your song in your voice. Unintended consequence. Didn't know that. So I'll stand at the podium, and if I have to do this thing right here, I didn't intend for it to happen. But that's your boy right now. You know, and all that I am, you know, chalk it up to Alcoholics Anonymous. All that I'm not, you can chalk it up to Ralph White. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.